following is a presentation of the Match Talk Podcast Network.
Hello, wrestling fans. It's time for the World Wrestling Resource Podcast. World Wrestling Resource was made that you as a wrestler, parent, coach, or fan can have access to all the resources of the very best in the world of wrestling. I'm three-time wrestling writer and broadcaster of the year, Jason Bryant, and I want you to join me, along with John McGovern and world champions Terry Brands and Dennis Hall, as we talk training tips, topical discussion, mental preparation, and more on the World Wrestling Resource Podcast. World Wrestling Resource is sponsored by Defense Soap and Compound Clothing. Find World Wrestling Resource on Facebook at facebook.com/World Wrestling Resource and follow us on Twitter at WWRESO and, of course, on the web at WorldWrestlingResource.com. Now on to the show as we join John McGovern, Terry Brands, and Dennis Hall. And welcome to Episode 9 of the World Wrestling Resource Podcast. I'm your host, Jason Bryant. Be joined by Terry Brands and Coach John McGovern. Before we get underway, we at the World Wrestling Resource believe responsibility, character, and leadership are the traits of a true champion. Champions become champions themselves, and as coaches, we provide the resources for champions. Integrity, excellence, and teamwork are the core values of the World Wrestling Resource. Right now, we're going to talk with the University of Dubuque head coach John McGovern. Coach McGovern, your team just finished up competition at the NWCA Multi-Divisional National Duels in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Kind of a zoo, wasn't it? I mean, you had five of the non-D1 divisions, and you had high school tournaments, youth tournaments, you had a college open out there in Fort Wayne. I mean, what was the atmosphere like out there for you and your team?
Well, it was a great atmosphere. Dave Dean and New Way hosted the event, and they've been supporting, you know, college wrestling. They actually helped start, I didn't know until I talked to Dave, Alma College, which we ended up losing to by a point, came down to heavyweight match, but they've been ranked 15th in the country. But, you know, Dave had talked about promoting wrestling to all those high school athletes and telling the coaches to, you know, just greet one or two parents and kids and make them feel welcome and promote, you know, the college wrestling to youth and high school wrestlers. And, you know, it was a great event. They allowed for 24 Division III teams and allowed us, teams that were guaranteed 4 matches and allowed us to get another match, even though we lost Alma to come in place. We got to wrestle Rhode Island, get a win there. But it's a great time for teams to, you know, see how they fare with the top programs in the country and get excited about the team aspect of wrestling.
Well, it's also, not to divert from the National Duels right away, but this just popped into my head. You'd mentioned the expanded teams in Division III with 24 of them. This last 2 weeks, we've seen two new schools added or announced that they were adding wrestling at the Division III level. That was Greensboro College, a Division III school, obviously, in Greensboro, North Carolina, not to be confused with UNC Greensboro. Greensboro College is the pride. I've actually been to that school. I actually was covering the Dixie Conference Women's Volleyball Championships 1 year, way back in the day. And the other one, Hampton-Sydney College, it's an all-male liberal arts school in Hampton-Sydney, Virginia. They had wrestling up until 1987. They just brought it back. So that's two new Division III schools in the last 2 weeks. And that also adds Milliken, which announced earlier this month they had cut wrestling in 2008. Now they're going to bring the program back. And, of course, Adrian announced also this year that they're starting men's and women's wrestling, the men's program at the Division III level. So that puts Division III wrestling starting next year at 99 programs. I mean, how excited does that make you as a Division III wrestling coach?
It's very exciting. I think it's going to continue to grow. The Adrian coach there was at the National Duels, you know, and they're adding women's wrestling too. And I think that's another, you know, niche for growth of college wrestling is the women's programs. And I think we're going to see more of that. And, you know, it's exciting for Division III to have all these new programs going across the country starting up.
You know, and you're right there in the Power Conference, you know, in Iowa, the Iowa Conference, even though they've gone to regionals now. But you're seeing growth. I mean, Ferrum added it, and that's in southwestern Virginia. You've seen University of the Ozarks in Arkansas. Southern Virginia, also in Virginia, has elevated their club program. They'll be a Division III school. So you're seeing wrestling start to move into the southeast. I mean, we've seen the NAIs adding down there. Now we're seeing NCAA Division III schools adding down there. And, you know, what do you think that's going to do for the landscape of wrestling and giving these athletes in the southeast opportunities to compete not that far from home?
Well, I think it really markets and promotes Division III across the country because now it's getting into states that maybe don't even have, you know, you know, a Division I program that's consistently fighting for a top 10, you know, finish in the nation, where you got a program, you know, like Alma College being able to come in there in Ithaca and compete, you know, for, you know, top 10 spots in the country. And I think it just gives it more visibility, you know, across the nation.
Now, as we circle back to the national duels, again, 24 teams in the Division III portion. From a coaching standpoint at the small schools, you had Division II, Division III, NAIA, junior colleges, and women all there in Fort Wayne. From where does this tournament, what does it mean to your program, and how do you guys peak for this? I mean, is this something that's on your schedule, like, okay, we got to go into the national duels and perform, or is it something where it's still kind of a litmus test to see where you guys are at?
Well, I think all the great teams treat this like it is the national tournament, and they get ready. And you know, Wartburg did a great job of getting their guys, you know, to perform there and you know, compete at that level. So they're ready for a back-to-back national experience with good competition. And so, you know, it is a national event, and I think the good teams treat it as such, and they're looking to compete and win. And, you know, not all the teams have maybe all their starting rosters, but that's not an excuse. You go out there to, you know, compete and treat it like that. And so, you know, Wartburg talked about, you know, they weren't ranked during the year in the Desert Duels. I think they, you know, had a less than Concordia, and I think they got pinned in a match. And then, what was it, Ken Anderson came back and pinned their guy, and they came to get an answer. And I think that's what great teams do, is if there's a, you know, a bullet that hits the team, they come back and they strike. And I think Wartburg's showing that they can strike again, and now they're ranked number one in the country. And you know, it's probably for a reason, and they're, you know, they're working hard. But there's some good teams in there. I mean, Concordia Moorhead barely beat, you know, Wabash for third by a couple points, and we were a few points off of Wabash in duels a week earlier with Chicago duels, 4 out of 6 match we won. We lost one, like, in overtime. And, you know, I feel like our team's in there. You know, everybody can compete at that level, but then it's about performing and really not having, you know, any excuses. So, you know, I think it's just getting guys ready to be able to perform and win the close matches and compete. So it was a great event, and, you know, hopefully we'll be invited back. But Wartburg did a great job, obviously, you know, of winning the tournament.
Now, as far as the national duels go, the way it sits, I know a lot of the Division I schools have been waffling in terms of their participation, location, things of that nature. But from a Division III aspect, maybe even your experience with knowing coaches in Division II, you bring teams into a central location. Division III is extremely concentrated in the Northeast and in the Midwest, and you guys don't have a whole lot of crossover. There is the Desert Duels. You know, I think what Williams comes out to Simpson, and Simpson goes back out there, in case you're wondering. Simpson is in Indianola, Iowa. Williams is out in, I think it's in Massachusetts, if I'm not mistaken. I think Williamstown, Massachusetts. But you don't get a whole lot of crossover until you get to Nationals. So the National Duels, you know, brings these teams together. And how beneficial is it for you and the squads out in the Midwest to see the teams from the Northeast prior to Nationals?
Well, I think it's real important. And I also think it's healthy for, you know, developing a fan base and understanding where teams stand nationally, and instead of kind of having these rankings based on kind of theory. It starts to put it in action, and you see which teams are standing out, how the matchups look, and it's good for everybody. And it also, you know, it's good for our wrestlers to see teams nationally. And so I think it's just good for everybody. Spectators, the wrestlers, the coaches get to see other teams, figure out, you know, where they got to do to, you know, beat teams at the national tournament, the wrestlers and the fans. So I think it's great all around. And it, you know, we had talked about the date, moving the dates, but, you know, at least in our conference coaches meeting, they felt like this was the best date. So I think it is It's a good date for us, and then now most of our Iowa Conference teams are going to start facing Iowa Conference competition. So it's a great chance to get national, you know, experience, and then we head into our, you know, conference and regional dueling experiences.
So what do you think the incentives are for the teams that go and compete in this thing?
Well, they'll be more ready for nationals because they'll have competed at that level, and they'll see what it is that they actually need to do to perform there versus in theory. So it makes things more of a reality. You want to keep their imagination up, but, you know, the losses, you know, can motivate and inspire to greatness, but then the guys that are winning can keep their imagination up, but also figure out a way to continue to improve. So there's still a lot of time to improve this time of year, but it's good if you're on top and you can wind the gap. But if you know, you take out the positives you can from it and keep building, because there's a lot of time to get better, and you just need to get better every day. So I think it motivates, actually. It motivates the athletes. It gets it into their blood a little bit. The competitive juice is flowing. I think if you miss out on that and you don't experience it, it doesn't maybe create it in your imagination and just getting your blood pumping and thinking about, you know, what it's going to be and getting to visualize who your opponents are and what it's going to take to win it.
Now, from an opposing coach standpoint, you know, Wartburg's won this thing five straight times, and you see those guys pretty regularly, and they lost, 100 out of their 103 points to graduation from last year, and they just reloaded. What does that say about the depth that programs, even at the Division III levels, can have in their room? I mean, you talk about depth at the Division I teams, and when a guy gets hurt, you can plug a guy in. Wartburg basically had to replace their entire lineup. I mean, what are some things that you've seen that Wartburg does well with their program that other Division III schools can try to emulate?
Well, they talk a lot about team over the individual. And, you know, obviously they recruit good kids. The kids going in there are coming in with a mindset of they're expected to win a team title. So the expectations within your team can really, you know, make the impact, because you got to have the horses in the barn to win the show. So they get kids with that mindset coming in. But at the same time, they you know, like Concordia, Whitewater looked pretty good, but they were tough there, but they weren't firing like they are now. And they consistently work on getting better every day. And so, you know, their lifestyle shows it. So they live in that lifestyle, but having that expectation and mindset from a team standpoint. And, you know, this year, you know, different guys at different times have stood out for them and stepped up. And so you got to have that on all great teams. You know, if you got two consistent guys, like Wabash has three brothers that are really good, you know, the Fevers. But, you know, to win it, you got to have, you know, everybody, all 10 guys, pretty much bulletproof and ready to compete for the team. But obviously they're a couple points out of third. They're right in there, and they lost. You know, Wartburg wrestled those Lefever brothers hard. What I was really impressed with was how they went right after their top guys, and it seemed like they were in point matches, overtime matches, on the, you know, number one, you know, returning national champ. And they're trying to beat every guy in that lineup. They're not trying to just, you know, keep it close. So just that mindset and then live the lifestyle, make sure those two match, seem to really work.
And as we circle back to the National Duels discussion, what do you think the future is for the National Duels with the smaller programs, Division II and Division III? I mean, you had said the Iowa Conference schools like the date. I mean, more teams in it this year, 24. It seems like Division III is all for a National Duels concept.
Yeah, for sure. And there's been discussion about, you know, every coach maybe has a little different opinion, but the consensus was go with this event, and then at the it'll be at the NWCA Coaches Convention. They'll, you know, kind of give their feedback and decide if they want to keep it there. But from what I heard, mostly they really liked it. The only few coaches with this time of year, some of the East Coast schools talking about, you know, that first day of the travel, they get three or four matches. They'd like to get two matches, and then the second day get three or four instead of having it loaded. I think some teams had four or five matches that first day, but maybe for us, you know, it wasn't as much an issue, but, you know, breaking it down, if more teams could get through the second day, but I don't know from a logistic if that can happen, but it everybody seemed to like it, and, you know, hopefully it'll, you know, I really don't want to, I'm trying to, you know, get the feedback from the other coaches and make sure I'm, you know, voice of the coaches, not saying my own opinion, but personally, I liked it, thought it went pretty well.
And now we're talking with Iowa Associate Head Coach Terry Brands. Everybody knows this guy's won a world championship. And, of course, the World Wrestling Resource knows that he's one of the most intense guys on the planet, regardless of sport. And big win for the Hawkeyes over Oklahoma State down in Stillwater. Kind of controlled everything, got some big wins. And before we get into our topics, Terry, what was the key in your mind to being so decisive against Oklahoma State down there in Stillwater?
I think the key with our team overall is our ability to be able to attack and, you know, put guys down early and shut them down if they come to us, and then create counter scores instead of just counters, and really focusing on that and bringing that intensity to the mat from that perspective. You know, the week before with Ohio State and Rutgers, we didn't really hit on all cylinders early in the matches, and it got us into some tough situations throughout those duels. So did a better job there, and need to continue to build.
Now, you guys had a unique schedule. I mean, right after the Midlands boom, you're flying east with two duels, and then, you know, two tough duels, both teams ranked in the top 25. Of course, Ohio State getting some consideration, kind of a trendy pick for a lot of people to think that they can win the Nationals this year. But how did your team deal with that stress of the travel? I mean, how did you prepare those guys to go from Midlands back home, out east, back home to Oklahoma?
They know their assignment. They know what they need to do, and they know that we, you know, put certain things on the calendar for reasons, and they know also that it all points toward March at the NCAA tournament in St. Louis, and you know, whatever happens between now and then will ultimately hone them to put them in the best position to win the individual title at their weight class. So it's not something that they're, you know, wondering or asking about. It's something that they just take it, you know, and they're solid that way. They're veterans, and they're hard thinkers. They like the challenges that we put out in front of them. And, you know, we talk to them all year and all season around throughout the season and throughout the off season about those type of things and preparing, and they handle it great. So, you know, it is what it is. Welcome to the Big Ten, as they say. And, you know, we're traveling to Maryland and Penn State and traveling to Minnesota. And it's no secret that we've been on a road swing, and there's no better place to wrestle other than Carter Hawkeye Arena than on the road.
Yeah, you guys seem to, you're one of those draws. Penn State and Oklahoma State are kind of the same draws. So, when you know, Iowa is, you know, I'd like to call them the New York Yankees of wrestling, because everybody loves to hate them. You know, basically because when Iowa comes to town, gyms fill up. And what's it like for you to talk to your guys? Because it's the bullseye, you know. Everybody's going to want to wrestle their best against Iowa at their place. I mean, how do you prepare the guys for that situation?
It's the same. It's a talk that, you know, we want to be at our best every time out. That's probably the thing that, and when we recruit, that's probably the thing that we, that sets ourselves apart from all other programs. Is the difference with us is we want to win everything at the biggest margin. You know, the other programs are talking about, yeah, we're going to get hot, and we're going to, or we got this duel big and coming up, so, you know, maybe they can afford to have a letdown on that duel or the duel after. And we're not about that. We know that we have a target on our back, and we want a target on our back, and we're going to give our best every single time, and we wouldn't expect anything less from our opponent. And, again, it boils down to our guys understand that, and they know the assignment that they're asked of from this staff. And they need to perform, or, you know, we'll you know, ultimately look for somebody that can do the job if they don't. And it's not a threat. It's not a bully. It's not something where, you know, we try to get them to do something that they're not capable of, or we, you know, want them wrestling in fear. It's just the simplicity of wrestling in Division I athletics, you know. You got to be ready to go, and you got to be ready to perform on the mat.
You guys are currently going through some things that a lot of college teams deal with. And then the second topic we'll discuss a lot, every team deals with, I think, even from the middle school level on up to college. And the first point is it relates to college with the scholarship divisions. Obviously, Division III does not allow red shirts, but is when to decide to redshirt a guy or when to pull him from redshirt. Nathan Burak wrestled unattached to Midlands. If I'm not mistaken, he's never wrestled at the Midlands attached. Is that sound about accurate to you?
Yeah, that's very accurate. And, you know, a lot of it's been tweaks and little injuries that he's had. And, you know, last year it was, you know, something in his arm. This year it was something different. And the year before it was something different. So, you know, and then you throw him in there and he does relatively well. And you're looking at your lineup and, you know, he's our best guy, even if he didn't perform well at Midlands, obviously, you know, just looking around our room and the way that these other guys are performing in our room. So, you know, we want to put the best lineup out there, and at the same time, we don't want to put a guy out there that we don't feel like is a contender either. So, you know, that's kind of why we're kind of hanging out with Burak and letting him kind of control his destiny there. And we feel like after the Midlands and then talking to him and figuring those things out that, you know, he is ready and he wants to go, and so we're going to throw him out there.
Now, when an athlete comes to you and says he wants to redshirt, how much does that play into philosophy? Do you listen to it, or do you have a plan that said, no, this is the plan we have for our team? I mean, how much input does the athlete have when it's not injury-related?
we don't have many athletes that come up to us and say, I want a red shirt. That's not the philosophy here. Whether you're red shirting or not, you are getting ready to win a national championship, an individual title at your weight class. And that's really, really important that they understand that. So either way, you know, the obvious benefits of redshirting are is if they're not the best guy in our program or they're not ready to contend, you know, we want to be able to build them up and create that in their wrestling where they do become contenders for the time when they do hit that lineup. So it's very important that they understand that. But, you know, if they're not ready, we're really talking to them about, hey, you know what, you got to do the right thing. You got to continue to train. You never know when we're going to ask you to get ready to go on the mat. You never know where the injury bug pops up, and we may need to throw you in there, and you're going to have to go, and we're going to need you ready to go. And so they get the message. It's very clear that way.
And you guys had this situation, I guess, when people look at the current starter in certain situations and they look to the bench and they see a freshman who seems to be having success. Obviously, people were talking about that with Derek St. John several years ago and Brandon Sorensen last year. And so when do you make that decision, especially with true freshmen who are having early season success, but there's the incumbent there or the guy that's been pointed to as like, okay, you're going to start for us. I mean, when does the gears get turned in your head to go, hey, when do we pull a red shirt in that situation?
The situation would be a drastic hole in the lineup. Somebody, you know, last year with Sorensen and Kelly and Grothis. Kelly and Grothis were both had already used their red shirts, and Sorensen had not. You know, both of those guys, all three of those guys were capable. And so you're looking at it, and you're, you know, really is Sorensen's third place that much more dominant than Grothis' fourth place at the Midlands? And so, you know, you have to answer that question. It's not really fair to say, well, Grothis beat him, Sorensen beat him at the Midland, and we're going with him, because that doesn't do us a lot of good from the way that we develop our guys. And so, you know, Grothis is a veteran. You know, he's had some tough matches. He's done some good things in our program. He trains hard. He's been through the Big Ten schedule. So down the stretch, he may be a better option just because he's a seasoned veteran. So we look at that, and, you know, we just do some evaluating and take a look at what we got and take a look at what the situation is, you know, in our lineup, and, you know, stacking up a guy against whether or not he's a contender at that weight class really is what factors into it. I keep saying that, but that's really very important that our guys get that message. And like I said earlier, if they're there to make the team and put an Iowa singlet on, and that's as far as their goals are, then it's going to be a really long career here for them.
Yeah, and then, yeah, of course, you're speaking about the situation last year. Moving to this year, it's, again, Grothis and Sorensen battling. And, again, not making this all about completely about Iowa, but, you know, teams around the country have this issue where they have two very capable guys. And, you know, when you look at competition, they might beat each other in a tournament. They, you know, one guy might have an advantage in the room. When it comes to winning a spot, take yourself out of the equation for a moment. What's the most common thing you've heard from your fellow coaches around the country on how they decide to pick somebody to get that starting nod when you have two guys like that?
You know what? I don't even know that I have my ear to the ground and what the rest of the country's doing. I'm really not even that interested in it. What I can tell you is that our guys will determine whether they're in the lineup or not. Sorensen and Grothis, they're in control of their destiny. And, you know, going into the Midlands, if one of those guys emerges as a dominant champion, you know, it answers their question. And then you hit them in the Big Ten schedule and they're doing their job and they're, you know, they're showing that they're capable in the Big Ten schedule, going through it, going into the Big Ten, they're going to be the guy. And for you know, and a lot of the problem stems because things are so close. You know, one guy won't necessarily take control, or both guys are doing a really good job. Then you got to make a choice. Like last year, Gilman and Clark, how do you know? You know, they both did a pretty doggone good job for us. So then that's one of those things where you kind of got to go with your gut and and make a call. And you know, there really wasn't any wrong decision there with Gilman or Clark. So, you know, that's tough. It's tough on the parents. It's tough on the families. It's tough on us. But, you know, if Gilman had won the Midlands like he did, and then all of a sudden he just kicks tail going through the Big Ten schedule, it would be an easy decision for us. And that didn't happen, so we had to start factoring in Clark again, and then we ended up putting him in there, and he ended up being an All-American. And Gilman probably would have too, but just one of those things where, you know, it's really clearly in their control if you want to be objective about it. That's how we talk to our guys.
Now, what advice would you give to a high school coach that might be in the same type of situation? Because with high school, you're not dealing with scholarships. You're dealing more with the parents. And little Johnny beat little Mikey out three times in the wrestle-off, but little Johnny's winning tournaments and Mikey's going 0-2. I mean, you know, any advice there for the high school parent and coach that's going through this?
Well, to the parent is, you know, let the coach coach. And to the coach, he's got to decide, you know, is the wrestle-off, is that the best solution? Or do you know who the best guy is, you know, when you get into outside competition? If you know who the best guy is when you get into outside competition, go with it. And one thing I would say is have clear communication with those parents. You know, make sure that they understand where you're coming from. They don't have to agree with you. They're never going to agree with you sometimes. And but just to have that open line of communication and to be, you know, level-headed when you're talking to them, and to make sure that you're giving them their fair voice, and stick to your guns and that type of thing. And a coach knows his team and he knows his athletes. And you know, the thing is that's why the coach is there. And sometimes there isn't a clear favorite. And you know what? Sometimes you got to go with that. And if a parent has his kid in that program, there's probably a reason why he does. It should be because he trusts the staff. And, you know, you should probably let that coach coach and move on, you know.
Now, you kind of were in that situation a little bit, too. We mentioned Mike Kelly, who's had a fantastic year. And this guy brings another dynamic to coaching. I mean, you had the guy that was battling for the spot. He's a senior. Wasn't necessarily one of the highest rated recruits, even though he was a state champion coming out of Iowa. And he's having a tremendous year, but he's kind of, you know, 1.5 wheels. That knee is usually heavily taped, or the leg is, and he's looked sharp this year. What's it mean for you as a coach to have an athlete, for a guy that's paid his dues and gotten through and is starting and is finally seeing some good success? What's that mean for you as a coach?
Well, it means that he's been paying attention. It means that he's a veteran. He was in our lineup extensively as a freshman. He wrestled in the Big Ten tournament. And then he was in our lineup each of the last 2 years up until he got hurt. We like Mike Kelly. Anybody who watches Mike Kelly knows he wrestles hard and he's never not in shape. The key with him is, you know, let's get him to realize where he's at and how doggone tough he is. And then turn him loose and see what he's capable of. Up until this season, you know, we didn't do a great job of, you know, maybe communicating to him how we felt about his wrestling. You know, how we felt, meaning that we feel like he was a contender each of those seasons. And did he believe that? That's probably where the separation was, you know. So, you know, that's, again, it boils down to communication. It boils down to us and our development with the mental and the emotional side of the individual, which happened to be him, that kind of thing. And then, you know, just bringing him along and throughout the summer and in the spring last year and through the fall, figuring out what his best weight class opportunity was. And this year he's up a weight and he's strong. He's a physical wrestler, like I said, and he's fun to watch. He's got a motor on him. So, you know, let's see what he can do up a weight. And it's been, you know, something where I think he's filled in, you know, reasonably well for, you know, a guy that was a national champion there for us 2 seasons ago. So
now we're going to shift gears to freestyle a little bit, coming to the United States again for the second year in a row, April 11th and 12th, the Freestyle World Cup. The draws were released by United World Wrestling. The Greco-Roman and women's draws, we'll just go over those real quick before we get to freestyle. Greco will be held in Tehran, Iran, with Iran, Azerbaijan, Sweden, and Germany in one pool, Russia, Hungary, Armenia, and Turkey in the other. The women in St. Petersburg, Russia, Japan, the United States, Poland, and Azerbaijan. The other pool will be Russia, Ukraine, Mongolia, and Sweden. And now as we talk freestyle, Pool A, Cuba, Russia, the United States, and Mongolia. Pool B, Iran, Belarus, Azerbaijan, and Turkey. And Terry, you know, the goal is to beat the Russians. Well, the goal is to be the best in the world at every weight. Beating the Russians just kind of happens to come in that space. But USA and Russia, I mean, you're going to wrestle them. What do you think of these draws?
I mean, based on the fact that where did we finish last year, ninth?
Yeah, somewhere in that range.
You know, I think we finished ninth. So, you know, in the cups in the U.S. this year. So, you know, I really, you know, if I'm the national team's manager or coach, I'm really looking at an opportunity here. I'm not so concerned about the draws. The draws are the draws is the way that I would approach it. And I would move on and I would get ready to win my pool. And then I would get ready to win whoever emerges from that other side and having a pretty clear idea who that's going to be within, you know, one or two teams there, right? So, you know, that's really where you're looking at. I mean, you got a team that is, you know, I would say pretty doggone capable. Do they understand the assignment, though? You know, and what I mean by that is like Burroughs. I don't think Burroughs last year against Sargoosh, where, you know, that's something where you need to teach him how to wrestle and talk to him about wrestling. You need to talk to Burroughs about, you know, Cold War things. What's at stake? Watching Sargoosh warm up, looking at the crowd, the anticipation of the Russian fans in the bleachers there when we were in Tashkent. You know, those are huge things that I think we failed to do as a staff to get him ready to go. So we need to maybe be more like that and look at this and realize that, yeah, we're going to have to go through Russia. And you know what? Russia's going to bring their best team. These teams are coming over here to learn how to wrestle in America because the world championships are going to be in America. And they're going to be on the west side of America. So there's no better arena than the World Cup to really get ready for that, you know?
Yeah, and as it relates to the World Cup, the schedule's been shifted a little bit. Last year, it was right in the heart of the college postseason, and it was out in Los Angeles. This year, in April, the opportunity exists for more people to go see it. It doesn't overlap the college wrestling season. And from your experiences in the World Cups, I mean, this event, it's an opportunity here, as you said, not just for the athletes, but for the fan base to really see the best in wrestling. The Cubans are coming. I mean, that doesn't happen that often that Cuba's going to bring their entire team to the United States. I mean, talk a little bit about the World Cup and its atmosphere and why the fans should be amped up for this thing to be held in the United States.
Well, the atmosphere of the World Cup, it's a team event. You know, it's a very, very solid event. It's something that, you know, we competed in and we wrestled in, you know, and it was huge in Toledo for a number of years, in Toledo, Ohio, back in the, you know, the golden era of USA wrestling through the 80s and the 70s. And we had, you know, John Smith and those great teams that were wrestling when Arsen Fedayev was wrestling, you know, Nate Carr and those two guys were killing each other on the mat in Toledo and that kind of thing. So there's just a lot of history from my end and understanding, you know, how important it is and the studying of the sport from the youth, you know, getting to know the teams and getting to know the individuals and those kind of things are the obvious things that immediately come to mind. But when you go into the dynamics of it, you're talking about FILA finally takes this thing and they put it on April 4th. You know, it gives us an opportunity to really bring, you know, our coaches, our collegiate coaches, to bring them together and to be able to, you know, get there and actually do some work on the thing. Instead of, you know, I know a few of the college coaches went there and then they had to, you know, just kind of go and you look and then you got to come back and got to get ready. There's just a lot of really better things that are with the date. And the anticipation, like you said, of the Cubans and the Russians, and then all of a sudden now they're both on our side of the bracket. You know, it really, it doesn't get any better than that. It's Cold War, it's Bay of Pigs, it's all these things that the history of these countries bring, and then now you add it, and you have this wrestling background and the nationalism and the way that, you know, people may approach that kind of thing. I mean, it just adds to the greatness of the atmosphere all the way in L.A. and the Forum and all those things that everybody already knows about. It's kind of a long-winded history, emotional kind of what motivates you type of thing from where I'm at. I'm really fired up for it.
Are you fired up that you can now legally vacation in Havana? You know, the U.S. has laxed those tourism laws now.
I don't know about that. My vacations are in wrestling places, and, you know, I've never really traveled anywhere, you know, unless I was, you know, with wrestling. You know, my vacation was driving back and forth from my house in Colorado down to the office where I lived and worked at the USOC. You know, I'd be driving up the mountain. That was kind of my 20-minute vacation there. And so, you know, that is what it is. I just think that, you know, obvious things are going to happen there. You know, do we need to get into a political discussion here?
No, it was just kind of tongue-in-cheek, more or less. You know, I saw it on Twitter, and I'm like, oh, that's interesting. I mean, it used to be you were either a wrestling person that could go to Cuba, or you were some celebrity that skirted the U.S. laws. But, yeah, you're right. We're not talking politics here, because I don't like talking politics. I like talking wrestling.
Well, good. Well, there's a lot of politics in wrestling that we probably need to eliminate. Do you have any ideas on that? Maybe that should be a topic that we interview you on.
Well, considering my joke is, I've said this, I've worked for just about everybody in wrestling. I always joke that I've had more jobs in wrestling than Wade Chalice, but I'm still behind Sammy Hansen.
Yeah, I hear you there, and you're probably close to being right on that.
Well, anyway, we've been talking with Terry Brands about some philosophies with coaching and dealing with red shirts and dealing with picking a starting lineup, previewed the World Cup. We talked with John McGovern earlier about the non-D1 national duels that were held in Fort Wayne. This is the World Wrestling Resource Podcast. We will see you next time.
Is part of the Matt Talk Podcast Network. For more wrestling podcasts, head over to MattTalkOnline.com.